Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Can a farm animal go extinct? What's the role of heritage breeds in modern farming and ranching? How does genetic diversity of livestock preserve the history of our nation and the future of our food supply? We're joined today by representatives of the Livestock Conservancy. Ryan Walker and Brian Larson are with us on the phone. Brian Larson, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Ryan Walker, thanks for joining us as well. Let's go ahead and start with you, Brian, and tell me a little bit about the Livestock Conservancy. What exactly is it?
Well, we've been trying to prevent any of our livestock breeds or poultry breeds from going extinct for about 41 years now. Hmm. And it's a challenge. First of all, we go around and try to discover and study those lost breeds and the breeds that are in trouble. And then if they are in trouble, we try to secure them by documenting things about them, getting breeders together, organizing them, communicating with them. And then after we get everything discovered and secured, we sustain them by education, building up their breed associations, and helping them learn about marketing and being sustainable members of agriculture.
Hmm. What's at stake, Brian, with this? Explain the big picture of what's happening.
Well, unfortunately, all across the world, we're losing a lot of our heritage breeds, and those breeds have great genetic potential for us to use in the future. Let's say that conditions in our world change and we have to change our agriculture. If we have these breeds who are already adapted to certain climates, certain nutritional levels, et cetera, why, then they will be more useful in helping our livestock adapt to different climates and environments.
Ryan Walker, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. Give me an example of a breed and how it might become endangered, threatened, extinct.
Sure.
Hang on one second. Can't quite hear Ryan. Ryan, can you hear me?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, that's better. Thank you.
Okay. So a breed that, for an example, a breed that might become extinct in the near future, looking at our conservation priority list, maybe a breed like, actually, many of our horse breeds, although they're not food animals, the horses are in a lot of danger. We've got breeds like the Morgan horse. Everybody is familiar with the Justin Morgan story, and that's kind of an iconic American breed. That breed is critically endangered right now, so that's an example. We work with 11 different species, so almost 200 different breeds. Choctaw hogs are critically endangered. They're maybe the most endangered breed that we work with. We only have a couple hundred left in the entire world. All located in the U.S. And so some of these breeds, you think of endangered animals and you think wildlife, some of our farm animals are actually more endangered than a lot of the wildlife that get much of the attention.
So that's what I'm wondering, Ryan, is how does it sort of happen? Because when we think about wildlife, we think about habitat loss and, predators that came that were not native to the environment. What causes the loss of one of these animals?
Yeah, great question. So as you kind of mentioned, with wildlife, for conservation efforts, we're often trying to protect habitat, give the animals mm-hmm. a place to live, kind of let them do their own thing and just live out how they live in the wild. With farm animals, they're part of agriculture, so it is a closed environment, and you basically need farmers in order to keep having livestock. In order for farmers to raise livestock and for it to be profitable, there needs to be a demand. And so it's kind of counterintuitive, but our unofficial mantra is you have to eat them to save them, which means, we need to be eating the products they produce, meat, milk, eggs, using things like fiber or using the animals for work, like draft work and things like that. If we don't have markets for these animals, then there's no incentive for farmers to raise them. and then their populations tend to decline.
How do you create those incentives?
Well, we work with over 150 breed associations all across the country. We've got members in every state, a huge network of small farmers and medium-sized farmers. You know, we're not exclusively just small farmers. You know, as Brian said earlier, these animals are a resource for all of agriculture. So some of the markets might be a niche market in maybe the fiber arts community for some of our wonderful heritage breed sheep. You know, we've got some incredible meats that these animals produce. You know, of course, backyard chicken eggs are pretty popular these days. So there are those kind of niche markets. But there's also a place for these animals to be used in larger scale production, not to compete head-to-head with some of the animals, but, you know, we may need to use them to bring back in genetics that, you know, help us reach certain goals that agriculture may, you know, in the whatever direction agriculture may head in.
Brian, when you get down to a few hundred of, you know, a breed or where something is threatened, how late is too late?
Good question. Well, I'll let Brian take that one.
Our names are a little bit too close sometimes, aren't they? What we do is rally the troops, and we get people who are good managers, know how to manage genetics, and try to use the diverse, even though there may be only 100 animals. After we study their ancestry, we may be able to find some that are not inbred, and so you can kind of build from there on a heritage breed like that. Sometimes when we have, like we have with the Gloucestershire spots and the large black hogs, we can bring in genetic resources from England and diversify our genetics that way. We find in some of these breeds that we're so tightly knit in breeding that, you know, there can be problems as a result. So bringing in the bloodline from a source country is a good option.
Hmm. Brian Larson, tell me a little bit about the international community then. Are how far and how connected is this community of folks who are trying to preserve these breeds?
Well, it's an interesting question because although, you know, we have this large world, our associations that are connected with saving rare breeds are very closely linked. We work with the Rare Breeds Survival Trust in the United Kingdom. We work with Rare Breeds Canada. We're very closely associated with the conservation efforts in South America. And then in Australia, New Zealand, we keep in close contact with them. And another interesting example of international cooperation is that we are working closely with saving the Caspian horse. The Caspian horse has almost disappeared in its native area around the Caspian Sea. And so we're working with people in that area as well as in the United States to gather genetic resources to keep that breed surviving.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. My guests are representing the Livestock Conservancy. Ryan Walker and Brian Larson are with us. And Brian Walker, when we talk about gene resources, I'm wondering about, you know, gene labs and sort of, you know, saving DNA. How far advanced is the science on this, or is this pretty much, you know, old-fashioned farming and ag work?
Yeah, good question. So in regards to saving genetics, what the Livestock Conservancy focuses on is primarily on the groundwork. You know, it's actually breeding animals, you know, living, breathing animals. We do also have gene banks that do cryopreservation. Basically, you put genetic material in a deep freeze, and we can keep it for a really long time. That definitely is an important part of conserving breeds, but it's also expensive, and there is a limit to how much we can save. You know, we can't put every animal into a, you know, information from
right.
every animal into a freezer. So it's certainly important, and we do utilize that, and we work with several partners. USDA is a partner of ours. The SVF Foundation is an organization that works to do some of this this work. But, you know, we do tend to, for the Livestock Conservancy, work with the breed associations and with kind of one-on-one with farmers to do a lot of the conservation work.
Brian Larson, is this... Do we find that people, you know, work and see this as it's a big ag versus a small farmer? Is it, you know, that kind of a debate and argument where mostly smaller farmers or, you know, medium-sized operations are interested in this kind of work? Or is everybody sort of on the same page and working together? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think we're all in this together. I think it really becomes teamwork with all of us. We need the large agriculture to meet the, you know, immense food needs for this world. But we see ourselves as a resource for genetics and also a resource for sustainable small farms. And so we're really not competing. I think we're a team. And sometimes in the future, I think we'll cooperate genetically to help with a swine population or a sheep population or a horse. But no, we're not concerned about anything but saving rare breeds and however best to do that. And I would say one of the values of being associated with large agriculture is that there's a tremendous amount of very talented livestock breeders in that population. And we'd like to engage them, get them involved as perhaps a sideline and a feel-good thing in agriculture to have them join us and help us save some of these breeds.
How do you establish priorities then? How do you sort of shuffle those around with the most need? Ryan?
Yeah, so the base of all of our work is basically what we call our conservation priority list. And similar to like a wildlife watch list, we have all of our breeds on a table. It is ranked in order of how endangered they are, and we tend to focus the most effort on the critically endangered breeds. So we've got categories of critical, threatened, watch, and then hopefully we can graduate them into recovering eventually, and then eventually move breeds off of our list, which we've done a few breeds in the past several years, have successfully graduated. So that conservation priority list, you know, we do a census every 10 years, which involves a lot of networking, calling people, emails, you know, finding out how many animals of what breed people have, and then we update that list every year. We go back and evaluate to see trends in populations between, you know, between the years. But it's a lot of work and a lot of relying on help from our members and from breeders and from our breed associations. It's just really, like Brian said, it's a team effort. You know, we have thousands of people working to make sure that these breeds don't go extinct, even though the populations are incredibly rare on some of these breeds.
Is there an economic benefit to being part of this work, Brian, or is it just a labor of love and it has value and it needs to be done? Or is there a way to, you know, see some gains from it?
Well, there are a lot of motivations for our people. Obviously, there's a lot of love for the animal and saving them, but we're working really, really diligently to make the raising of these breeds sustainable. We're finding that a lot of restaurants and food outlets like to advertise that they have these breeds for meat, eggs, milk, etc., cheese, and they are getting a premium price. It does involve marketing skills, but just, you know, using our current membership as a resource, I think, you know, we can help people learn how to market these products and really make a sustainable effort out of it.
What about horses, Brian? You mentioned two different kinds of horses, which are not part of the food supply at all. How do you communicate the value of that with people?
Well, we find the horses are an important part of our history. And here again, I think genetically they may become important again. We find that the draft horses, some of the small farmers, some of the homesteaders like to use horses for draft purposes. These horses also work, some of the breeds like the Colonial Spanish breeds work really well in competition. When they appear, they appear very fancy and dignified, and some horses are endurance type horses like the Marsh Tackey down in the Carolinas. They all have their specialties, and it isn't just having a racehorse for the Kentucky Derby. It's about doing things on the farm, doing things competitively. When kids are growing up and having a horse that has a very good disposition and they can safely ride them. So there are a lot of uses, and horses have always been part of agriculture, and that's why they've been included in the conservancy list.
And Ryan, what about consumers? And what can the rest of us, if you're not working in the industry, how can people participate in the conversation and be part of a solution?
Yeah, that's a good question. The first thing that I'll throw out is that we have a breeders directory, a breeders and products directory on our website that people can visit and actually search for these products that we've been talking about if they want to purchase them. We've got breeders all over the country, producers of these products, and there are some retailers that carry them too. I would say that if people end up visiting maybe a local farmer's market, check with the farmers and ask if they're raising heritage breeds, or maybe just ask what the breeds are. Doing a little bit of research and becoming familiar with the breeds is a great way to kind of brush up and be familiar. If you go to a restaurant, a type of restaurant that would serve something like heritage breed products, check with the waiter or check with the chef and see if they're interested in, carrying heritage breeds or if they had thought about it. So, creating the demand is, again, what helps encourage farmers to raise more of the animals so that their populations become secure. So finding the heritage breed products, and that's something the Conservancy is trying to help do, is to connect people with the products. And then also, working one-on-one with farmers, you can do a lot of searches online finding heritage breed products for sale. And of course we need farmers too. I mean, the animals won't raise themselves. So if anyone wants to get involved, raising some, even if it's just a backyard flock of, half a dozen chickens, that's a way, even if you're not breeding the chickens, you're purchasing chickens that encourages a chicken farmer or breeder to breed more of them. And then we have more of the breed and it becomes more secure.
Brian Walker and Brian Larson are with the Livestock Conservancy. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We appreciate your time.
Our pleasure.